The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Another international break. We ask, is Tyrone Mings the perfect partner for Harry Maguire? Is Harry Winks the way forward in midfield? And how come England's Ross Barkley is so much better than Chelsea's Ross Barkley? Ireland's attritional qualifying campaign takes a hit in Switzerland. Ronaldo hits his 700th goal in defeat. And there's more Nordic drawing for Spain. Arsenal women win big in Prague, while Manchester City are pegged back by Atletico in their first leg. The Premier League is back. Pogba is out. De Gea's struggling for the Liverpool game. We'll look ahead to all the weekend's games. We'll congratulate Mark Bowen for appointing Mark Bowen as Reading boss. Answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Faye Carruthers taking notes. This is professional. What are you doing?
Well, I'm not sure if it's professional is the right word.
Is it pod related?
I ran into the podcast. It is pod related.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
You're not just doing your admin.
No, not today.
Lars Sivertsen, hello.
Hi, Max.
You had to run for a train.
Yeah, it was an awful form of sort of reality check that I didn't need this morning.
How long did you sweat?
Still sweating
from the run to the train.
Yes.
And what was the distance? Are we looking
not that far.
100 metres?
Further than that, come on. Okay. No, it wasn't when people say run to the train. They usually mean have a light jog up the stairs. I had to run quite far, which I haven't done in a while and perhaps should do more often.
I see you as a 200 metre. Good bend runner, Lars, I see you as.
Not right now, though.
Well, not necessarily. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
And you.
Listeners will be excited to hear that you, as you announced, it is a hungry Baz that sits before us, which means around part three you may get irritable.
I'll be fine.
Producer Jonathan is about to type, get on with it, please. And we absolutely will. We'll start with Bulgaria 0, England 6. Yesterday we recorded and put out a special episode exploring the events off the pitch as a separate issue to the game itself. Barney Ronnie, who was in the stadium, Kevin Miles, who was as well, Troy Townsend, Musa Okwonga, Elliot Ross joined me and Barry. So we're not going to go into it in detail. It's rare that we, you know, I tweet out this is really important, but I felt it was really important. And I don't know about you, Barry, being in the room, I felt I learnt a lot yesterday.
Yeah, Troy is a real nice guy and a very interesting guy, and I think even he acknowledges he kind of gets tired of listening to himself, because, you know, getting any time there's a racial incident, he is the go-to guy for pretty much every media outlet, including ours yesterday. But there's a reason for that, because he's very eloquent and he's a very nice fella. Musa, I must confess, wasn't hugely familiar with his work before yesterday, and sort of had a route around to see what other stuff he's done, and again a very interesting, knowledgeable guy. Elliot's knowledge and history of racism, I learned some stuff there, but I was sort of proud to be part of it, and not delighted to be asked.
I mean, like, you proud to be sitting near the people who knew what they were talking about. That's how I viewed it from my point of view.
We're not complete imbeciles.
No, that's true.
Despite what some would have us believe.
Lars, you listened to it?
I did, whilst walking the dog. It's obviously very sad that you have to make that kind of special pod. It really shouldn't be necessary, but I thought you did a really good job exploring all the subjects, and I'm not... There's not much I can say about the incident that wasn't already said in a more sort of erudite manner than I would say it on that particular pod. So do check that out, dear listener, if you're interested.
Right, well, let's do what we said we're going to do, which is move on to the game. After that defeat in Prague, we were after a very comprehensive performance. We got it. We're going to win Euro 2020.
don't get too excited.
Look, Bulgaria, obviously not a great team, so...
To say the least.
Don't want to get carried away. Let's look at the positives for England, though. Tyrone Mings, on his debut, there is a place up for grabs as Harry Maguire's partner. It means Maguire can play on the right and Mings plays on the left. It gives the team balance. He is a very mature man off the pitch, but Lars, I was very impressed with him on it too.
Yeah, and I was reading up on him a little bit for a piece I did in Norwegian about the whole incident, and he's a really impressive guy if you just think of as a player, he came very, very close to just dropping out of the game entirely when he was 19. I believe he was working in a pub and playing on the sixth tier in the pyramid or something. Like, he was way down the leagues and didn't look like he was going to have a career at all. And to think that he's come to here, where he is, you know, legitimately a £20 million plus defender, and absolutely looked an absolute natural playing for England, and of course had to handle these adverse circumstances, and he did, and no, it was very good and very impressive. And it's interesting that he's a converted fullback, because he almost, like, he doesn't have the physique of what you always think of as a centre half. Like, he's quite quick and rangy, like, he can get around the pitch, having been a fullback previously, and him next to Maguire could be a really good fit.
He comes across as a natural leader.
It was Danny Higginbottom, I believe, who mentioned recently, because Mings got his sort of big break when he was invited to play in the trial game at Ipswich under Mick McCarthy, and Danny Higginbottom was also playing in this game, and he was kind of taken aback by this 19-year-old kid with just no experience at all of senior top-level football, coming straight out of non-league, who turned up at this trial game and was sort of ordering him about and sort of telling him where to stand and doing this sort of thing. And he just thought, this guy has got something. And that was before he'd even had a career at a top level. And since then, he's also gone through this sort of injury nightmare as well, which, I mean, if you come through that, you must come out as a changed and different and bigger person, I guess, because I think we have talked about it on the pod before. I think we underestimate the psychological toll of these sort of long-term injuries. So he's clearly a very strong individual and certainly has a lot to add to the England setup.
Yeah, Gareth Southgate himself said he has this worldly wiseness, which I thought was an interesting observation. He also said you could hear his communication on the pitch as well. And I love watching players like that, because they see the overall picture, and particularly where, obviously, in defence, it's like the goalkeeper, when you have goalkeepers shouting instructions the whole time, like Jordan Pickford does. He's seeing the entire pitch and can see where people can positionally change and move. And I love players like that, because you need that kind of intelligence. I can't wait to see what he can do in the future.
Ross Barkley scored 2. Could have had a hat-trick if Raheem Sterling hadn't tripped him up in the box. And he's played really well for England. He seems to be locked in this battle with James Maddison and Mason Mount and Dele Alli for that position. It's great to have so much competition, which, in a place that often feels weak for the team. But I get the sense that people don't want Barkley in there because he's just not as exciting.
I don't know. I mean, I had a list of players up who are sort of in contention for that position, and I had 5, and I've just realised I'd completely forgotten about Dele Alli. I'm not sure Barkley delivers often enough at club level to be worthy of the place. And yeah, he played very well the other night, but you have to add the caveat that Bulgaria were really terrible and made life very easy for him and England's other forwards. On the strength of that performance alone, should he nail down the spot? No, I don't think so, but it's better than playing badly against poor opposition.
Is it slightly harsh to, you know, compare the two starting lineups from the Czech game and this game, because they probably played well and pressed, and so if you come off that international break as one of the players who played in the Czech game, you'd be like, well, that isn't fair, because they played Bulgaria.
But that's our opinion. It's not Gareth Southgate's, is it? He's going to be looking at that from that exact point of view, not ours.
Yeah, and I agree in so much as that it's hard to analyse this game from a sporting perspective, because Bulgaria were just so completely abject and offered just nothing at all. Just a terrible, terrible team. But there are some things, like the fact that when you change the shape of the midfield back to what they've been used to playing, it certainly held together much more. Henderson wasn't sort of randomly hitting the pass to the opponent all the time. I mean, his passing numbers were way back up. And there's also stuff like Rashford. I think it was a really good time for Rashford to score an excellent goal. I mean, given everything that's going on at United, this would be a really good time in Marcus Rashford's career to hit a sort of run of goals. And maybe that tremendous hit was the start of something there. I don't know.
I was a bit disappointed that Barkley, bearing in mind Raheem Sterling set up that goal and did all the hard work, and then Barkley just ran off in the opposite direction when he scored and didn't go and thank him.
Are you saying those two, are you going to start?
No, I'm not going to start turf war, no.
Also in that group, Kosovo beat Montenegro 2-0. All that means England need a point from their remaining two games to guarantee qualification. Home to Montenegro, away to Kosovo. That would be some slip, wouldn't it? Second place is between Kosovo and the Czech Republic. And it would be amazing for Kosovo to get to a major finals, wouldn't it?
I'm excited. It's a great, it's a good story, and they're a country where, like, I've interviewed one of their players, and it's one of those countries where you can tell, like, it means an awful lot for them to play for the national team.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's great to see that they're succeeding. There's no blasé about it at all.
Okay, Group D, Ireland are still top of their group, but that defeat 2-0 in Switzerland is a hammer blow to their qualification hopes. And Barry, it all quite predictably comes down to Ireland v Denmark.
Yeah, you know, you look at the group, Ireland are there top. Yo, hurrah. I have no idea how they are there. They're terrible. They've scored 6 goals. They've conceded 4. This is, you know, after 2 games against Gibraltar, among those 6 games. And somehow they're top. It's almost like they're defying the laws of physics to be bestriding the group like a colossus. And they still probably won't qualify because they have to beat Denmark to secure a qualification. And that almost certainly won't happen. I mean, Ireland have played Denmark 5 times in the past 2 years and failed to beat them on any of those 5 occasions. On the evidence of what I've seen during their last 2 games, I would imagine they will struggle to beat them at the 6th time of asking as well, but you never know.
Haris Seferovic scored a great opening goal there, Lars, left-footed from 20 yards.
Yes.
Which wasn't as fun as Duffy's own goal in the 94th minute, but there was nothing he could do. And in between that, Darren Randolph saved a penalty. Seamus Coleman got sent off again, second time in recent weeks. It was harsh because he was sliding at 100 miles an hour across the action, but it did hit him in the arm. Are Switzerland good, Lars?
They're pretty good. They're not amazing. They are probably just about the best team in this group, slightly ahead of Denmark, I'd say, on paper. Just because it's a slightly mixed bag from Denmark, this particular team. But they're not a bad team. They've got some good players.
I mean, Denmark beat them 1-0, but Switzerland... Yeah. Absolutely slaughtered them and still lost 1-0 in that game. Kasper Schmeichel made some terrific saves, 4 or 5 outstanding saves to keep Denmark in it.
Good goal from Seferovic in this game, but I mean, they've kind of lacked a really good centre forward. They've had a decent team for a while now, Switzerland, with a lot of players, some of which have done well in the Premier League, so they'll be familiar to a lot of listeners, but they've kind of lacked a really outstanding centre forward. And I've watched a lot of Switzerland games in which Seferovic has not been very good at all, yet he has something like 68 caps or something bonkers like that.
I suppose, Barry, one thing that we were slightly worried about was, what if Mick McCarthy had this extraordinary, you know, turned this squad into the Harlem Globetrotters, and then Stephen Kenny had to come in and it would all be awkward. But it now seems that Stephen Kenny coming in will not be such a controversial thing.
Yeah, Stephen Kenny's under-21s are doing tremendously well, I believe. But I don't have a problem with Mick McCarthy being manager of Ireland. I'm a big fan of Mick's, but they're just not very good, and it's painful to watch them play. They're very direct, and they might scrape in, but, you know, I wouldn't have them among the favourites for the Euros if they do.
But yet, the thing about them being a bit direct and attritional, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that if you're getting the result. I mean, yeah. Northern Ireland play like that. It's just they're better at it, which is, I guess, where you want to be with Ireland, ideally.
Look, as it stands, so barring unlikely slips by the Swiss against Georgia and in their final game against Gibraltar, or Denmark losing to Gibraltar, only a Republic win against the Danes in their final game will be enough to secure qualification for mixed boys. They're well placed to get a playoff. Most of League B are almost guaranteed a second chance. That's where the Irish are at. Also in that group, Gibraltar were 2-0 down at home to Georgia, got it back to 2-2 before losing 3-2. That would have been their first point in qualification scene. Almost, hashtag almost some scenes. Northern Ireland won 3-2 in the Czech Republic in a friendly. They were three up by half time. Paddy McNair nipping in front of the centre back to slot home. Johnny Evans with a goal of League Two proportions. A classic goal mouth scramble before McNair got his second, breaking away from the Czech defence before rounding the keeper. The Czechs got 2 in 2 minutes midway through the second half, but Northern Ireland held on. Qualification very tricky for them. They are 3 points behind the Netherlands and Germany. They are home to the Netherlands and away to Germany. They need 4 points. But still a good performance, eh, Lars?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that's not a nice group to end up in. Like, I mean, no one's really expecting them to go through there, and they've made a tremendous fist of it.
If they don't come in the top two, which seems unlikely, they're in a similar position to the Republic in the playoff system. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll round up the rest of the Euro qualifiers, starting with the 700th career goal for Cristiano Ronaldo. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, live shows for you. Football Weekly versus Science, October the 30th at the Science Museum. Sold out. We should probably plan what we're doing there now, Barry. 27th of November, Indigo at the O2. Football Weekly, last chance to see us live in London for a while. Me, Barry, Wilson, Ellis, James, not sold out. 20th of December, me, Lars, Wilson, one more on Belgrave Music Hall in Leeds. Yes, Lars?
I've never been to Leeds before. I'm excited.
Oh, excellent. Leeds will welcome you.
It's a good venue.
It's a nice venue, isn't it? Intimate. That's what it is. 27th of January, Liberty Hall. We are sold out. Barry, just me and you, and it's sold out.
Fantastic.
We can do our Proclaimers set, can't we?
How many tickets? 10?
How dare you, Faye? What does that hold, producer Jonathan?
It's about 400, isn't it?
350, Faye.
All right, sorry.
Oh, ye of little faith. We last time did another date, didn't we, Baz? So maybe we'll do that again.
Vegas-style residency.
Exactly, yeah. 2 days. But, you know, let's see. We'll see. We're negotiating. That's what we're doing. Group B of the Euros. Ukraine 2, Portugal 1. Notable for two things. Alexander Zinchenko's celebrations. And Cristiano Ronaldo getting his 700th career goal. It's a big win. Yes, Lars.
Or, if you believe Spanish paper Marca, his 701st.
Oh, really?
They insist he scored another goal. There was a contentious goal that he scored a while back that the league, I think, awarded to Pepe or something. They awarded to someone else, but Real Madrid and Marca insisted that it was, in fact, Ronaldo's goal. So there are two separate goal counts here.
Trying to get that one back off Pepe.
But yeah, no, you're probably right. It probably was number 700.
I mean, that is so ridiculous, isn't it? 700 goals. I mean, I'm not saying Cristiano Ronaldo is underrated. But that is quite good, Barry, isn't it? He started his career on the wing.
Yes, it's a lot of goals. I don't really know what to say beyond that.
Do you want the table of people who scored 700 or more? Ronaldo, 700. Gert Müller, 735. Puskas got 746. Pelé got 767. Romario, 772. And everyone's favourite, Josef Bichan, Czech-Austrian chap, played for Rapid Vienna and Slavia Prague between 1931 and 1955, got 805. So well done to him.
What were Romario's figures?
He got 772.
Didn't he claim to get well over 1,000?
Some of them were actually Pepe.
I don't know. The only thing I know about Romario is, and it may be apocryphal, is that he had a clause in his contract that meant he didn't have to go into his own half. He actually said, I don't have to be all I'm doing. But he was such a player, wasn't he, Romario? So look, well done, Ronaldo. Is there anything we can add to that conversation, as apart from Barry says, yes, it is a lot of goals?
It is fascinating that you have someone who, like Barry mentioned, just started out as a different type of player, right? I mean, you have someone who was a sort of dribbly type winger who converted himself into sort of entirely sort of predatorial goal muncher, and it's unusual that you see someone like not just switch from one position to a different role in the team, but to then become almost one of the best ever in that role. Like, you don't see that very often.
I also think the most interesting thing of that stat, having read out everybody who has got that or above, he's the only modern day footballer, if you like. Which is that? So that is astounding.
Does that mean it's easier because you play more football matches, or harder because football is harder now. Is it harder now?
But that doesn't translate, does it? Because if you're thinking you play more football matches now,
yeah,
he's the only modern day footballer in that list.
True. It's a good point. What I noticed from this is you have to play for quite a long time to get that. That was my first conclusion. The game itself, Yarmolenko scored one of the goals for the Ukraine. Zinchenko was very happy about that. Afterwards, he danced around with the post-match interviewer. Then he either invaded the TV studio or they somehow superimposed him onto their coverage of him dancing around. And then he proposed. And so what a lovely... And Ukraine qualified. He proposed. What a great time.
Proposed to who?
To his wife. Well, his missus.
Is she the TV reporter?
I don't think so. Oh, she is the TV... Is that his wife? Wow.
Well, not if he just proposed to her.
Fiancé.
Fiancé, then. Fiancé's a terrible
Well, like,
word,
had he
it?
Met her before? Did she make a really big impression on him during the interview?
He said that, you know, no one's ever proposed to Jeff Shreves. What did you make of that? And that was it. You had me at, what do you make of that performance, Alexander? So Ukraine qualify. Now, Ronaldo's penalty, by the way, awarded by Anthony Taylor. Nice to see our referees out there in the world. Very soft for handball. Gave a second yellow card as well. And Portugal did have about a million chances in that game. Hit the bar in injury time. Ukraine qualify. Portugal on 11. Serbia on 10. Portugal have two very winnable games, so they should get through that. Group H... France or Turkey would have qualified with victory, but they drew one all. A game sensational because Moussa Sissoko had two shots on target. one of them really nearly went in as well. In the second half, Olivier Giroud put France 1-0 up with a header with 15 minutes to go. Khan equalised 5 minutes later. Just presumed that France would be better than Turkey. What's your take on this? They're both level on 19 points at the top of this group.
Just that Turkey have been all right in this qualification, and they seem to, as a team who have often in recent years been less than the sum of their parts, they seem to be something approaching the sum of their parts at the moment, and then they're quite a difficult team to play against, and Lugunes has done a good job. It's worth noting, France did have an absolute bunch of chances here, yeah, and probably should have won, but a really good performance by the Turkish goalkeeper. Giroud is now... He's the third highest goal scorer for the French national team ever at this point, Giroud.
Who's above Giroud?
Thierry Henry and Michel Platini.
Okay.
And that is it. So he scored more goals than Trezeguet, Zidane, Just Fontaine, Papin, Djorkaeff, like everyone. Giroud is right up there. What a man.
He is. And I, you know, Deschamps has had that issue that he keeps saying, if you don't start for Chelsea, I can't pick you. But you think he should keep picking him because he's... really integral to that side. He was integral for that side in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, I mean, and just the sort of record he has, it's almost, I mean, he started playing for the national team quite late. I mean, I think he made his debut in his mid-20s, if I'm not remembering this correctly. He's not one of these guys who's been a regular since he was a teenager.
So do you think he would move in January then?
I think at his age, well, Chelsea would be loath to lose him, obviously, because they can't sign anyone else to replace him, so it'll be a bit bad for them. But you're 33 and you want to play football. You don't have that many years left, and you have
got West Ham written all over it, hasn't it?
Him and Haller, that would be a little bit odd. But I think there's a lot of teams out there who could use the sort of target.
Palace?
No, higher up, like, surely.
Well, if Palace win on the weekend, they'll go above City, don't they?
I suppose that's true.
Look down on Palace. Right, Turkey, France on 19. Iceland who beat Andorra 2-0. One for Gylfi Sigurdsson on 15. France have two very winnable games. Turkey have Iceland next. If Iceland win, that might be tense for the Turks, but they should probably progress. Turkey, of course, some controversy during this game. They celebrated their goal with military salutes, which appear to be a supporting gesture for the Turkish army's invasion of Syria. French politicians and ministers have called for sanctions against the Turkish national team. There was also a Kurdish solidarity banner held up in the crowd, which inspired fights to break out. We will keep an eye on that and update you as and when. Group J, interesting because Italy have won all eight, alongside Belgium, one of only two sides with a 100% record. They won 5-0 in Liechtenstein. Finland's 3-0 win over Armenia means they're almost certain to get second spot. They need one win. They're home to Liechtenstein next. Great news for their strike partnership of Teemu Pukki and Jari Litmanen. It will be their first Euros. Be fair, first Euros, right, Lars. And
you know, it's magnificent.
You're basically finished. So
well, I've lived there for a bit. No, they've done really well. And great to them because they've been very inept for a very long time. And it's not like they have some sort of, like, Teemu Pukki, obviously very eye-catching, but there's not some great raft of players who are all at huge European clubs. They've done tremendously well.
Well done, the Finns. Group F, Spain drew again, this time in Sweden, a 1-1 draw, last-minute equaliser. I've done a terrible joke again that Lars won't like. So I wrote 50-year-old Henning Berg changed nationalities and put the Swedes in. It was Marcus Berg. I do apologise. I wrote in brackets, it's funny. Ha, 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 ha.
Because
I presume it would be taken out of the script when I opened it up this morning.
We can only hope.
Anyway, we
were not very good. In Norway, we played in this group as well.
You drew in Romania.
Yes, and that was slightly disappointing. We after I said a lot of nice things about them on Monday, I have to add, they weren't that good then.
Okay, so Spain are in. Sweden will probably make it. With apologies to our Polish listeners, we forgot to mention you qualified on Monday. We let you down, and well done to Poland. So who goes into the playoffs depends obviously on who qualifies or not. What we know is this. Three teams are confirmed to be in the playoffs already. Scotland path C as both host nation and Nations League group winner. Georgia path D, and Belarus, whose seeding is to be decided based on who else qualifies. And I think that is all the international football until mid-November. Apart from, Lars, you have some humble pie to eat because you criticised one small nation and yes, another one won.
Yes, I wrote off not just the San Marino football team, but I think their entire country. I think that might have been a bit harsher of me.
We did the analysis. We have no listeners in San Marino.
Okay, so that's good. We can slide
we're
them up. Yeah.
Unlikely to get any no, after that.
No, but I brought up this fabulous list of the countries who are doing the best in the FIFA rankings per capita, which turned the list was a bit outdated and had some glaring omissions. But I think the number itself is interesting, and far and away the team that's pound for pound, person for person, doing the best for the Faroe Islands. And having mentioned that on Monday, they went in one. They beat Malta, who have almost 10 times the number of inhabitants. I mean, the Faroe Islands is a tiny place. They've got 50,000 people. And I guess that is my little sort of identity crisis on Monday about what is the point of these tiny nations. I guess part of the point is that if the Faroe Islands with their 50,000 people can be in any way competitive, then a few of the others can as well. I actually got in touch with Rogvi Baldvinsson, who scored the goal for the Faroe Islands, and to congratulate him and tell him about this great sort of FIFA ranking per capita thing. I'm not sure he was very interested, but he did point out they've got some good young players coming through. And I also asked him about this whole nation League business, right, about whether being in Group D and playing against some less illustrious teams had helped them, and he actually made the point that for them they were kind of more excited again about having a chance to play the big teams, and that had, like, when they got a result against the Greeks, I mean, that really fired up the interest in football on the Faroe Islands. And he recalled them sitting in the dressing room in 2017 being just 2-1 down to Portugal, and the feeling was that they were really cross with themselves for having let Ronaldo score twice. So I guess the takeaway from that is that footballers at a high level are incredibly competitive and confident guys who basically just want to play the hardest teams possible.
Now, a few moments ago, producer Jonathan punched the air. I mean, I've never seen him celebrate. And normally, any hand gesture he does is one of frustration. He punched the air because when you mentioned
Rogvi Baldvinsson. Yeah.
Why?
Well, he's been at Bristol Rovers, who I believe is a club very dear to producer Jonathan's heart, and one of not too many exotic foreign imports who have spent time at Bristol Rovers.
Producer Jonathan says Baldvinsson was signed by Bristol Rovers amid much excitement. Any lower league side, if you get a foreign player, Cambridge had a player called Armand Onne, a Frenchman who was mercurial and completely random. We got very excited.
Oh, Luton had Jean-Louis Valois.
Oh, yeah, Jean-Louis Valois, I remember.
Loved him.
And it's very Championship Manager, isn't it? But anyway, Baldvinsson moved to Bristol, got a flat, did some training sessions, decided he hated Bristol, left, never played, but he's sort of gone down in cult history. Who wants to play? How many listeners do we have in the Faroe Islands?
Me!
Okay, how many?
I don't know.
But I mean, you wanted to play the quiz, Faye. Yeah, that's a terrible terrible guess.
I was just trying to be enthusiastic.
Okay.
20.
Barry.
4.
Lars.
35.
Oh, 36.
Take that.
But just so the Faroes know, we've got 5 more listeners in Iraq. 41. So
they could be Faroese people.
Could be.
On patrol.
You're absolutely right. That sounds like a Chris Morris film to me, doesn't it? The Faroese on patrol in Iraq. Anyway, welcome everyone from the Faroe Islands to Iraq and everywhere in between.
They are just that a community of 50,000 people can have a national team that's competitive is mind-boggling. And we should just appreciate that.
Okay, well, I'm sitting here appreciating. Women's football, Faye. Viviana Miedemar, who is my favourite women's footballer, scored four times as Arsenal beat Slavia Prague 5-2 away from home. Great chance to reach the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, she is just sublime to watch. She scored three goals in their 6-0 aggregate win over Fiorentina in the last 32 as well. Four in this game. She's just absolutely incredible. Had a hat-trick in the first half as well. They were 5-0 up after an hour. Absolutely crazy. They'll be annoyed that they conceded too late on. But yeah, first time in the competition since 2013 as well for Arsenal. So they're going to want to really put their mark on it. And they certainly have so far, you have to say, taking the Czech side back to London, you would be convinced that Arsenal would be progressing to the quarterfinals, most definitely.
Manchester City drew 1-1 at home to Atletico. It was a late equaliser for the Spanish side. How disappointing a result is that?
They'll be disappointed to have not kept a clean sheet, because they've kept a clean sheet in every single league game so far this season, and they're unbeaten in all competitions this season. So yeah, frustrating. Tony Duggan returning to her former club as well for the first time since leaving. All the fans chanted her name before kickoff. She had a fantastic chance earlier on to bury the ball in the back of the net when it had come off the crossbar, and she blazed it over. So she'll be disappointed with herself from that. But Janine Becky on the score sheet again for Manchester City. They will just be annoyed, because I think, having read the match report, they were pretty much in control of this game in the second half in particular. So they'll be really annoyed to have conceded late on.
Not a great turnout. There's so much is talked about attendances. We'll get on to the fact that England has sold out Wembley for the game against Germany. This crowd wasn't brilliant.
Just over 1,200. And for a massive game like against Atletico and the return of Tony Duggan to Manchester City, you would have expected more perhaps. But then again, you know, it's on a Wednesday night, so that might, you know, be the reason why. But, you know, we also can't forget the other home result, which was Glasgow City beating Bromby 2-0. In Denmark, which was fantastic. They had a little bit of luck. Sam Kerr was accredited with the goal in the first minute, but actually took a really heavy deflection. But it was an own goal from the Bromby goalkeeper that let Leanne Ross's free kick in. But that's a fantastic result for Glasgow City.
England-Germany on the 9th of November. Sellout. Bear says, how significant is it that the Lionesses have sold out Wembley? I think it's fantastic, but in the wake of two subpar performances and Neville's bizarre post-match comments, does it mean attitudes are actually changing towards women's football, or there's just a growing fan base, or they've just marketed it well?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal. I kind of guessed it would probably be a sellout because of the marketing. The only thing that slightly concerns me is that there have been a few comments since the announcement that it was sold out saying everybody just needs to make sure they turn up. And that, I kind of think, well, why wouldn't they turn up? They've got tickets. I've got tickets. You know, that concerns me slightly. So I wonder how much of a sellout it is in terms of fans having bought tickets, or how much of them have been given away, or corporates, etc. But, I mean, certainly, bearing in mind the record attendance for an England women's match was 45,619, the potential to double that is astounding. There were 80,000 at the Olympics final in 2012 at Wembley, but for England, 45,000. So, you know, they'd also broke the record when they played at the Riverside the other week against Brazil, although it was a defeat, just over 29,000 there, and that was the record outside of Wembley as well. So, yeah, definitely you can see attendances improving. The appetite is there. I was looking at some stats earlier on, and 100,000 people have attended the opening three rounds of the WSL this season, and it was 92,000 across the whole of last season. And I know that that's obviously skewed by, you know, the big stadiums, Manchester City at the Etihad, London Stadium and Stamford Bridge as well. However, that after three rounds of the season shows exactly the impact that the Lionesses had in the summer.
you mentioned Sam Kerr, producer Jonathan, saying you're playing for Glasgow City, not Australian Sam Kerr. As he writes, Sam Kerr is the Moussa Dembele of the women's game. There's hundreds of Sam Kerrs.
How many Max Rushtons are there in the world?
I think I'm the only one that I've found. I mean, I've done spend a lot of time checking.
There is another fake Carruthers. She got
holy Carruthers. What does she do?
I don't know what she does, but she's significantly younger than me and got in touch with me about 10 years or so ago when I was working at Talk Sport, just to say, I think these messages are for you. Some people are a bit weird, aren't they? And I should bless her. She'd had some horrible messages.
On Twitter, at B. Glendenning is you, Barry. But on Instagram, at B. Glendenning is an old woman in America called Brenda, and I tagged her in a couple of things. She asked to be removed. Anyway, all that will do for part two. Part three, we'll start looking ahead to the weekend's Premier League football. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The Premier League is back. The best league in the world, isn't it? The big game, the only fixture on Sunday. Manchester United host Liverpool. Some real bragging rights up for grabs. De Gea is unlikely to play. Paul Pogba is out. Could this be a cricket score, Barry? Or could Manchester United somehow win this football match?
It's possible, but you'd have to say extremely unlikely. I personally think Liverpool will batter them by three or four goals, possibly more. They look to be better in every single department. Danny Mills, a couple of weeks, or was it earlier this week or last week, did his combined Manchester United-Liverpool team, had 11 Liverpool players in it, and didn't get any stick, really. Because you look at it and go, well, who? I think the only thing people were argued about were, you know, is he seriously saying Jordan Henderson is better than Paul Pogba? And you'd go, well, on current form, and yeah, he is.
He's more consistent.
Yeah.
I thought the only stick we'd get was there were people who wanted different Liverpool players in that 11. That's the hard
possibly,
thing.
Possibly, yeah.
Rob Smythe wrote a really good piece in defence of Solskjaer in the paper today, which kind of, I'm very easily influenced, and I read it, and there were a few things I thought were interesting he said about a kind of not an agenda, but a sort of anti-Solskjaer mood, this idea that a bad Man United story is good for journalists. There's a sort of historical still, not anger,
enmity.
But Manchester United winning everything for all that amount of time, and a general patronising feeling towards Scandinavian football. And I think I might be guilty of all those things, three. Sorry, Lars.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it was a good piece. Everything Rob writes is good, whether you agree with it or not. I agreed with most of what he said today. I thought perhaps the most interesting, well, one of the more interesting things he pointed out was that between 1988 and 1990, Manchester United were terrible. Their manager in that period was Sir Alex Ferguson. I do think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had been over-promoted. He didn't do a particularly good job with Cardiff. Molde, Lars would know more about that than me. But I don't think it's patronising to suggest that Norwegian football is not quite at the same level as the Premier League or Championship.
You shouldn't pat Lars on the head while you're doing that.
You moved away from him slightly.
But you know, there is an awful lot of blame to go around at Manchester United. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer deserves some of it, but the vast majority of the blame, you know, point your big finger of blame elsewhere.
About the whole they were bad at the beginning and the Ferguson thing, I tend to want to quote Slim Charles from The Wire, who said that the thing about the old days, they the old days, and today Man United is the third richest club in the world, and football is a different game. They, as a club with those resources, there's no reason why they should be this bad, like this bad. But the thing about it is, that's not just on Solskjaer. like it is also about how the squad was put together and what decisions were made in terms of letting people go in the summer and in terms of not bringing people in. Like, we know from various reports from pretty credible sources that they were looking at they were looking at Sean Longstaff, for instance, that at one point there was interest in Christian Eriksen. So we know they knew they needed to do something with midfield. There's a good piece in The Athletic on Ed Woodward where there are a few nuggets, for instance, that Solskjaer kind of wanted Herrera to stay. Solskjaer wanted Lukaku to be sold early so they had time to address the striker situation. And, you know, he's such a team player. Like, he's never going to come out and say, this is not the squad I wanted. This is terrible. That's not something he's ever going to do. But hand on heart, like, no one wanted, I don't think anyone at the club wanted this to be the United squad for this season. Like, it can't have gone completely right. And the injuries they've gotten, I don't know enough about injury prevention to know whether that's methodology or whatever. But if you look at that squad, there are areas where they can sustain injuries and it's kind of fine. Like, even if Maguire is injured, right, they have centre halves. They might not be great, but they can play. They lose De Gea like they do now. Okay, Romero is one of the best reserve goalkeepers in the league. But like, if Pogba's out, there's like no one in that midfield who can pass a ball. That's like the one injury they absolutely can sustain. Same up front. Well, I can say there's another one up front. They have almost no forward. So if any of them go down, they're in trouble. And so when they get injuries to Pogba and Martial, that's really bad. Like, that really messes up their plans in a big way. So not all of it is Solskjaer's fault, I don't think.
There is a bit in Rob's piece about Lukaku and the fact that Solskjaer looked at Lukaku and said, teams don't win leagues with Lukaku. So Martial, it's like you mentioned, Lars, that injury thing. That is quite a big deal, right?
But there's people, teams don't win leagues with Lukaku thing. Like, who's he played for? Like, West Brom and Everton? Like, I don't think Lukaku is the reason they didn't win the league. I mean, honestly, like, if you put him at Juventus this season or any of the other European, like, put him in at Bayern Munich, I think they could win the Bundesliga with Lukaku up front. I think that's a pretty weird argument. But aside from that, it was a very good and well-argued piece.
So, yeah, Crystal Palace, Manchester City. Palace beat Man City, the Etihad last season. They've got, you know, they've pushed them, haven't they, Palace? They have something. I wouldn't say they have something over City, but they do better than most teams. And as I said earlier in the pod, if they win this, they go above Manchester City. Is this just a quirk of fate and random, or are we?
It can't be a quirk of fate and random. It's numbers. That's what football is. 3 points for a win.
True, but Crystal Palace, even if they go above Manchester City, they shouldn't be above them.
Says who?
I say it.
Leicester shouldn't win the league.
Okay. I mean, you might be right. Maybe I'm just saying that I've mentioned Crystal Palace really at all in this.
That's a fair point, but I think they're odd because it's like Ireland in the Euro qualifiers, right? I mean, Palace have got 8 goals in 8 games and they're on 14 points. That's pretty unusual, but it's because they really were well organised. I mean, Hodgson gonna Hodgson. It's the Hodgson thing. He sets them up. They're very well organised. They're tough to break down and they've been able to turn results in their favour. It's what they do. It's really impressive.
Race for the Champions League spots. Leicester play Burnley. 4th place Leicester v 7th place Burnley going into this weekend. Leicester can briefly go second with a win. You must be upset, Lars, that Burnley are doing so well.
Well, it's not really. I mean, their numbers are less absurd this season. Okay. They're not blowing up all the models now in the sense that, I mean, their XG against suggests that they've defended really well. If you look at the shots they've conceded, they're mostly from distance. So they're just playing well, like in a way that's quantifiable and understandable at the moment.
Everton, West Ham, the early kickoff. Bournemouth, Norwich, Villa, Brighton, Chelsea, Newcastle.
Everton, West Ham's kind of an interesting one. It's just sort of the meh derby.
He said a meh
derby. I know exactly what you mean. It's a brilliant. Who has the early kickoff? Is it Sky or BT? I forget.
BT.
Let's hope BT, you know, do a massive graphic. MEH. The meh. Duh, I love that.
It's not that meh this time round, though, because Silva could lose his job. He's had such a poor start.
And we'd all say meh. You're right, he's had a really poor start, hasn't he? And West Ham actually are doing better than.
Yeah.
They're doing better than meh, aren't they? Spurs, Watford.
I see that,
yeah.
But are they? They're still a bit meh because people thought, right, well, there's possibly going to be a couple of places in the top four up for grabs. West Ham are looking like they might get one of them, and then they go and lose against Palace when everyone was expecting them at home, when everyone was expecting them to win that game.
Yeah, I know it's early to look at the table, but they're eighth, and that's probably where they should. I mean, there's a good case to be made. They probably have like the 8th, 9th best squad in the league. Fair enough.
I think Pellegrini's finally got the players that he's wanted to. This is a proper Pellegrini squad, whereas, you know, he hasn't been able to do that before. And I think Haller's been really impressive. They've got Yarmolenko back, which is effectively like having a brand new signing. I've been quite impressed by
West. Especially when Giroud comes in the next window as well.
Yeah, I'm a little bit whether they are good enough at the back, or maybe that's me being lazy, but it's I think you wonder a little bit, but I agree. And also, if you're going to be like a mid-table team that's not challenging for Champions League, probably, and definitely not getting relegated, like, this approach is a really fun way of doing it. They have a lot of fun players. Like, they have a lot of guys. If I was a West Ham fan, I'd look forward to watching them play at the weekend, because they're players who will entertain you.
Wolves, Southampton, 3 o'clock kickoff. Spurs, Watford. Imagine how loud the crisis klaxon will be at White Hart Lane if they don't win that one. And obviously, we'll look ahead to Sheffield United, Arsenal on Monday. Tom says, does anything scream Arsenal capitulation more than Sheffield United away on a cold Monday night? And we should congratulate Trent Alexander-Arnold. Officially been entered into the Guinness World Records for 2020. The 21-year-old has been recognised for claiming the most English Premier League assists by a defender in a single season after getting 12 last term.
That's very specific.
That's not front page, is it?
It's got to be a big book if you're starting to put stuff like...
Guinness World Record should be most number of milk crates you can balance on your head or something, shouldn't it? Or longest
baked
fingernails.
Eaten with a cocktail stick
exactly.
in a minute.
Exactly.
So, most interceptions by a left-sided midfielder in League Two in a single season.
Yeah. Sean Ingle, father of the pod, his good lady wife, will be alongside Trent in the Guinness Book World Records because she ran the fastest marathon in fancy dress.
Yes, she did. Yeah. I was in it.
That's quite something.
For the longest ever radio show. 121 hours in a shopping centre in Cambridge.
Whoa.
Yeah. Quantity, not quality. You get annoyed when the pod's over an hour, everybody. Just imagine that. 121 of them. In fact, it took me longer to get it than I held it for because someone in Slovenia started on the Wednesday. I started to hallucinate by day 6. You know,
wouldn't have made for good radio that,
something
actually.
To do. A bit of Premier League news. Martin Ziegler in the Times saying the Premier League is to announce Leicester Liverpool at 8 p.m. on Boxing Day. There'll be 4 kickoff times during the day, all 9 games to be televised on Amazon. So difficult for fans going to the games, good for people who hate their family and can just turn the football on and eat turkey sandwiches, I imagine. Rams says, can you spend a bit of time on the Championship? The fight at the top of the table seems more exciting than the Premier League race. 2 points separate the top 6, 4 points between 1st and 10th. I was looking at the fixtures for this weekend. Bizarrely, the top 10 all play sides outside of the top 10, which I think is mathematically impossible. But that is, no one is running away from that.
I've been saying this for...
It is mathematically possible.
I can confirm that it is.
It appears to be happening. It just seems unlikely.
I have been saying this for a long time. The Championship is by far and away my favourite league. It's competitive every single season. This season in particular, it is fascinating. Everybody expecting Leeds United to run away with it. West Brom top. I've seen Forest a couple of times this season. They're not necessarily playing the prettiest football, if you like, but Sabri Lamouchi's got them playing well and solidly, and they're second. And, you know, 20 odd years since they've been in the Premier League, the fans are starting to get really excited about it. Brentford, which is where I'm going to be this weekend, they're playing Millwall, and I thought Thomas Frank would have perhaps done a better job with them this season. And I watched them against Nottingham Forest before the international break, and he was pleased with the way they defended. They only lost by 1-0, but I mean, they just weren't clinical, and that's a real shame because I watched them against Derby early on in the season and they were fantastic. They were on 3-0. But Luton doing all right. We're in 18th.
Okay.
Got Bristol City this weekend though, so that's a bit of a worry.
You mentioned Derby and that court case finished in the week. Both Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett admitted their drink driving charges after they were arrested on the night of the crash, which left their club captain Richard Keogh injured and out for the season at least. District Judge Jonathan Taff explained a prison sentence was an option, instead handed down 12-month community orders, ordering them to both carry out 180 hours of unpaid work and banned them from driving for 2 years. Sean Draycott was the lawyer representing Tom Lawrence, said that he's made a gross error of judgment, was a, quote, decent young man who behaved out of character, and that he'd become quite dependent on alcohol since the death of his mother, an event which has impacted greatly on this young man's psychological health. Sunderland news, Barry. They've appointed Phil Parkinson as their new manager on a 2.5-year contract. Are you excited?
I don't think it's a appointment that will excite too many Sunderland fans, but I wish them all the very best. I'm not unhappy with the appointment. I think I said to you before the pod started, I would have preferred Gareth Ainsworth, but I think that's because he has long hair, fronts a rock band and drives a muscle car, none of which would particularly help Sunderland get into the championship.
It might.
This appointment, his direct style of play has its critics, but apparently he's a good man and a decent manager. He's won promotions with Colchester and Bolton. I think he was 3 years at Bolton. He only paid cash for one player and still got them up into the championship and kept them there.
Reading, Mark Bowen, and lots of people are saying, you know, Mark Bowen is the sporting director of Reading and has appointed himself as the manager of Reading, which is great, isn't it? He was appointed their sporting director. He joined them as technical director in March and assumed greater responsibility in the summer. So it's not, you know, there are other people involved in this. Chief executive Nigel Howe says Mark has 2 decades of coaching on his CV. He's tasted promotion to the Premier League, spent most of his coaching career in top flight football. He's obviously always standing next to Mark Hughes when Mark Hughes is getting annoyed with referees. So it's unfair to say Mark Bowen has appointed Mark Bowen, but it's a great headline.
Yes. And I don't know Mark Bowen, I don't know the situation at Reading, but they're two, like, sporting director and head coach, very, very different roles that demand a very, very different skill set. And I can't imagine there are too many people on the planet who are completely well-suited for both.
And when he became sporting director, did he do so with a view to appointing himself manager? That's what I'd like to know.
It's a great question.
To which we have no answer.
No, because this is my point. There's this great suspicion, I think, for a lot of coaches in this country that sporting directors are all after second-guessing them and whatever. And that, to me, is a fundamental misunderstanding of what the roles should be and how you should divide those responsibilities. So it's always a bit of a strange look when you see one go from one post to the other.
Well,
we shall
see. He may do a tremendous job. We wish him the best of luck. Mm-hmm. League 2's Leighton Orient have appointed former Plymouth manager Carl Fletcher as their new head coach. He's agreed a contract until the end of the 2021 season. He replaces Ross Embleton, who'd been the interim head coach following the death of Justin Edinburgh. La Liga has asked for El Clasico on the 26th of October to be switched from the Nou Camp to the Bernabeu over fears of civil unrest. You may have seen days of protest in Barcelona after 9 Catalan separatist leaders were jailed on Monday. La Liga made the request to the Spanish Football Federation. We will talk to Sid about this on Monday. The Golden Boy Award finalists have been announced.
Is that part of Crufts?
Isn't it? It's a funny title, isn't it?
The Good Boy Award.
Who's got the glossiest coat? Last year's winner. It's for Europe's most impressive footballer under the age of 21. Matthias de Ligt is in there. He won it last year. Phil Foden, Guendouzi, Mason Mount, Moise Keane. Jadon Sancho is one of 4 Bundesliga players on the list. Kai Havertz, Alfonso Davies, Dejan Jovetic as well. 7 from La Liga, including Ansu Fati, the 16-year-old, Vinicius Junior, and this year's favourite, João Felix. 2 more from Italy as well. And the 2 nominees from outside the top 5 leagues, Erling Braut Haaland,
yes,
the moody Norwegian, and Daniel Marlon at PSV, who are both scoring for fun this season.
What does impressive mean? Because just on a human level, Alfonso Davies is an ex-refugee. Like, I mean, him and his family moved to Canada as refugees and, you know, making your way in the world and being signed by Bayern Munich and getting your first games for Bayern Munich. That's incredibly impressive, as just if you want to put it that way. But of course, like, how do you measure that compared to, like, Jadon Sancho and Kai Havertz and other, like, there's such a bizarre
thing. Well, I mean, it's like Sports Personality of the Year. It's not.
It's arbitrary and weird. It's a
false title, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned Alfonso Davies. Lots of Canadians have been in touch because Canada beat the USA.
Yes.
Alfonso Davies scored. So did Lucas Cavallini. Stunning the US. This is their first win over the US since 1985. SI.com, with a brilliant sentence, which I may steal. It says, it's hard to not read this in an American accent. It snapped a winless skid of 17 matches. I feel like I've snapped a winless skid in my amateur football career. Between the two nations, puts Canada in control of their group. Jeff says, Canada beat the US for the first time in 34 years. The start of a CONCACAF power shift or a colonial anomaly? Do you think Fikayo Tomori will ever regret his decision? He could have played for Canada. He played, Tomori, for the under-20s Canadian in a 2-1 win against England in 2016. There you go. A little bit of FA Cup news. One club will receive a bye to round two of the FA Cup when the first round draw is made on Thursday following Berry's removal from the Football League. Paul says, my work colleague was called up to play international football for Anguilla and scored last night. Any chance for a shout-out to Calvin Morgan on the pod tomorrow? Hashtag Sunday League Dreams. He scored in a 3-2 defeat to Puerto Rico. In the 89th minute, they were 3 down. He got it back to 3-2. They couldn't equalise. 0 points from 3 games. But we would like to say well done to Calvin. Chinese Taipei have got a player called Emilio Estevez. which is tremendous, isn't it? Final question from The Mule. If you had to glue yourself to any Premier League footballer, who would it be? Lars.
Alex Tetti.
Why?
He's a pretty chilled out and nice dude. I'm told he sleeps a lot. Like, I like a good nap. No, it's Alex Tetti is for me.
I mean, how glued would you be? Would it, like a Extinction Rebellion protester with just your hand on his back?
I was thinking,
or would you be slathered in glue?
I wouldn't be protesting, Tetti. I wouldn't
and like give him a hug.
I think it would be sort of down the side. I'm going sort of like if you were in a defensive wall, sort of down the arm. So sort of, that's where I. He didn't. The Mule didn't give any.
Well, maybe the Mule should have put a bit more thought into his question.
Okay, that's fine. I'll go Ashley Barnes, you go Alex Tetti.
I'll go Timu Pukki.
Okay. Johnny J.R. Roberts says, can you get Faye to say, holy Carruthers, it's your birthday, happy birthday, J.R.?
Holy Carruthers, it's your birthday, happy birthday, J.R.
And that'll do for today. Thanks for your time, Faye.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, it's
been
Lars.
A joy.
Thanks, Max.
Cheers, Barry.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.